Thumb-sucking irrelevance. Whew. Sharp, sharp words. So it was 50 years ago that the Unitarian Universalist Association was born, after a pregnancy, as it were, of more than 100 years. In telling the story of the consolidation of the Unitarian and the Universalist faiths, historian Warren Ross called it a century of flirtation. A century of flirtation, or perhaps minuet is a better metaphor, he said, for it was a relationship marked by a continuing series of approaches and withdrawals, of asking first, why not, and then, why? In 1960, the congregations of the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America voted to consolidate and become the UUA. And the delegates to the convention declared in unison, let us together build the free and universal church of tomorrow. Let us together build the free and universal church of tomorrow. And so in the spring of 1961, all the legal minutiae of the consolidation were completed. So it was almost 50 years ago to the day that Unitarian Universalism was born. The consolidation of these two historic faiths, the Unitarians, who were primarily composed of urban intellectuals, and the Universalists, who were historically made up of the more emotional and evangelical rural folk, was truly a bold experiment. Culturally, historically, and theologically, the Unitarians and the Universalists had their own separate identities and orientations. But what they held in common was a commitment to the power of a progressive faith to have a positive impact on the lives of people. This is what they shared at their core. And in the end, it was that shared commitment to the liberal ideals of freedom, freedom of belief, hope for the future, and working to improve society that prevailed. And in 1961, the first General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association was held. So our 50th anniversary GA will be held in Charlotte, North Carolina in June. And I encourage, since it's so close, I encourage as many of you who can attend to do so. And so on a 50th birthday, 50 years later, I think it's a good time to ask ourselves some questions, to kind of do an assessment of where we are. How are we doing? Has it worked out? Where have we succeeded? Where have we fallen short? If success were measured only by numbers of members, we'd probably have to admit that we're not doing oh so well. While Universalism had experienced a sharp decline in population from its height in the late 19th century, during the decade leading up to the merger, the Unitarian Church was flourishing. It was thriving. From the end of World War II to 1960, Unitarian churches grew from 350 in number to over 1,000. So Unitarians were really rocking and rolling at this time. The Universalists were struggling. But somehow, for some reason, that growth that the Unitarians were experiencing came to a screeching halt upon our consolidation. And let me be clear, I'm not blaming the Universalists for this. So anybody here who claims to be a Universalist, it's not your fault. But the truth is that we are actually smaller in absolute numbers now than we were at the time of our consolidation. We number somewhere in the neighborhood of 160,000 Unitarians and Universalists worldwide. Now, I am glad to know that this church is bucking that trend, that national, that international trend. I understand you're growing vitally, and it's great to see so many of you here today. There are so many that I wonder whether you're considering adding a second worship service on Sunday morning to invite more people into this great thing we have going here. We're doing that at Media. We're actively in discussions about having two worship services rather than just one. And I would hope that you would be considering that too, because I know you're on an upward trajectory. It would be great to see that continue. Fortunately for our movement, numbers of members is not our only metric. Our size or lack of it belies our power. We are, in a sense, the Davids of our age. We are the Davids of our age, and we have taken on some pretty big Goliaths. Unitarian Universalists have fought on the front lines of the battles for racial equality. We were the first denomination to ordain openly gay and lesbian clergy. We have led and we continue to lead the fight for marriage equality. And now we're on the front lines of the battle of the immigration reform movement. In Arizona, we are known as the love people. I don't know if you know this. We're known as the love people because of the yellow shirts, the Standing on the Side of Love campaign. We're known as the love people. That's a pretty good thing to be known as, I think. And so the truth is, despite our small numbers, we have had an immediate impact on countless lives. And I, for one, want to do more and be more and touch more and more people and change their lives too, which is why I see our churches, why I want to see our churches flourish and grow. It's not about bigger bank accounts. It's not about doing more for ourselves. It's about changing others' lives. But as David Bumbaugh said in the reading, if we don't have a clear message, no matter how saving a faith we have, we are not going to be able to get that message across. We are, I think, at our best when we are organizing, when we are activists. We rally around causes and speak out against evil and oppression. We excel at rolling up our sleeves and getting things done. What we're less comfortable with, and where we face some serious challenges, is in the arena of religion itself. Sometimes we even hesitate to call ourselves a religion. We call ourselves a movement, we maybe call ourselves a faith, but we don't claim Unitarian Universalism as a religion. We are a religion. We are a religion. But since the time of the merger, we have struggled with issues of identity, with answering questions like, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? What makes us a religion? And what holds us together as a faithful people? In 2005, the UUA's Commission on Appraisal told us that the process leading toward consolidation focused minimally on theological differences. Unitarians and Universalists were thus merged organizationally, but theology was more or less left alone, the report said. And so what has happened is that theology has been more or less left alone since the consolidation for the past 50 years. The question of what we believe has been left to individual choice and individual understandings ever since that merger. Now, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know to say that Unitarian Universalism is a non-creedal, non-dogmatic faith. That's something we hold near and dear to our hearts. What that means is there's no litmus test for membership. You don't have to subscribe to a specific set of beliefs to belong to our church. So we are bound together not so much by our beliefs, but by our covenants, by the promises we make to each other. Promises about our commitments, promises about how we will be in relationship with each other. The non-creedal nature of our faith is one of its hallmarks. It's what sets us apart from the other so-called mainline religions. And I think it's what makes us stutter and stammer when one of our friends, like Sarah's friend on the playground, asked us, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? Which, of course, makes our evangelizing for our faith very difficult. And if you've heard it, you can say this along with me. It is what led to that joke that many of us have heard. What do you get when you cross a Unitarian Universalist with a Jehovah's Witness? Someone who knocks on your door for no apparent reason. That joke is funny because we see ourselves in it. So we're of two minds over this question of belief. We either ignore it entirely, We ignore it entirely, or we get mired and down in this morass around belief. Some of us will simply choose not to engage it. We say to each other, oh, we respect and honor the diversity of beliefs in our congregations. Then we don't talk about what it is we really believe. We don't engage over questions of belief. Or we try to talk about it, but we aren't equipped. We don't have the tools. We don't have the language to talk about our beliefs. And so when we encounter friends, like Sarah encountered a friend on the playground, friends who may be Catholic or Presbyterian or Episcopalian or Jewish, and they say, what is it that your religion is all about and what makes it a religion? We almost start to believe, well, maybe it really isn't a religion. Maybe it's not really a religion. Our faith can sometimes seem to others and sometimes to us like a giant donut where there's a big hole in the middle. A big hole. And so we are compelled to ask, what holds us together? I would submit to you that to ask the question, what do Unitarian Universalists believe, is actually asking the wrong question. And to think that we are or can be bound together by shared beliefs is probably a futile endeavor. To focus on beliefs is probably a futile endeavor. I think the more productive question to ask is, who is a Unitarian Universalist? Or what is your church all about? In our church, we have taken to answering this question or completing this sentence. Our church is a place where. Our church is a place where. How would you complete that sentence, I wonder? Our church is a place where we can exercise religious freedom, where we accept others as they are, where, dot, dot, dot. Our church is a place where. It identifies us in our church. It puts us in our community. So this question that I'm trying to reformulate from belief is really a question of identity. What is our shared identity? Do we have a shared identity as Unitarian Universalists? That question I'm prepared to answer. That question I'm prepared to answer because last year, Kent, Reverend Kent Mathias, and myself, and seven other area UU ministers engaged in a process that took about, I think it was 6 or 7 months all told, in which we sought to encounter this question, to engage this question together of, can we articulate a shared UU identity? So our group of nine, we didn't have a better term for who we were, our group of nine actually came up with a statement of shared Unitarian Universalist identity, and I'm going to share it with you this morning. But in true UU style, I have to first, of course, offer a disclaimer. So, this statement is not a one-size-fits-all kind of proposition. There will be something in this statement that I absolutely know. I know in my heart someone will disagree with. You will disagree with some part of this statement. The nine ministers who came up with this statement, each of us was like a little uncomfortable with this word or that sentence. So I implore you to get past the idea that this identifies you in every word of the statement. What we have sought to do is to articulate a Unitarian Universalist identity that generally fits most Unitarian Universalists. It is also, as you will hear in a moment, an explicitly theological statement. We talk about God. Can you imagine that? Now, for those of you who are not comfortable with the word God, I would ask you, again, to translate that into your own meaning, the divine, the sacred, the holy, spirit of life, whatever works for you, but stick with me through this, please. So, I'm going to read the statement. It's kind of long because we're UU ministers after all. But I'll break it down into pieces, but I want to read the whole thing through for you first. It goes like this. And remember, this is about all of us, not just the nine ministers. We Unitarian Universalists, base our faith primarily on experience. As humans, we suffer and are often broken, but our faith teaches that we can all find wholeness. We experience God as a spirit that binds together all of existence and animates all of life, rather than a being that controls existence. This spirit of life is a mysterious force of love and grace found in nature, community, and within ourselves. We are all a part of it and all exist within an interdependent web of life. We are limited beings, but we are responsible for one another and we help create the future. When we practice our faith through generosity, gratitude, humility, and compassion, we help to make God manifest. We do this not just for ourselves, but to serve others, promote justice, and transform a hurting world. Now, there are probably a dozen sermons embedded into that statement. Maybe even a lifetime's worth of them. So what I want to do today for you is just to break it down a little bit and give you my interpretation of each of the elements of this statement. And I would encourage you to ask Kent to elaborate more on this statement, whether it's through sermons or in a faith development program here at USG. So let's start at the beginning. We base our faith primarily on experience. This means that our personal experiences of mystery and wonder and awe, all the joys and all the sorrows of our living, form the foundation for our faith. This statement affirms both our rational, our cognitive abilities, the head part of us, and our feeling, affective, and emotional parts, our hearts. It also recognizes that our faith is an ever-changing, always shifting thing that should be growing as we live out our experiences. To say that our faith is based primarily on experience differentiates it from many other faiths that are based on books or something that happened 2,000 years ago. Our faith, it says, is dynamic and not stagnant. We are open to the transforming power of our experiences. We go on to say, as humans, we suffer and are often broken, but our faith teaches that we can all find wholeness. Life, as much as we would like it to be, is not all sweetness and light. I think sometimes one of the criticisms of our faith is that we are overly optimistic. And while we are an optimistic and hopeful people, we have to acknowledge we're not Pollyannas about it. We know that a life fully lived will include pain and loss and regret. We know that we all encounter tragedy and hardship, that evil exists, and that there is such a thing as sin. And this "and" is critical for us, and we can all find wholeness. The statement says we can all find wholeness despite being broken. Now, what this wholeness looks like may be different for different people. It might be achieving a moment of peace within a hectic day or week. It might be reconciling a relationship that's broken. It may be, to you, reaching heaven or a state of nirvana. But whatever wholeness might mean, this statement affirms that it is out there, and it's possible, and that it is available to everyone. Everyone, without exception. This particular phrase affirms our universalist heritage, which said that all of us will someday gain the kingdom of heaven. And this, we say, remains true, although when that happens, in this life or in the next life, and what heaven might look like, what wholeness might look like, depends on the person and the circumstances. But the bottom line here is that no one is excluded either from the pain or the potentialities of life. All right, you ready for the God part? You ready for the God part? We experience God as a spirit that binds together all of existence and animates all of life rather than being a being that controls existence. We go on. This spirit of life is a mysterious force of love and grace found in nature, community, and within ourselves. We are all a part of it and all exist within an interdependent web of life. And so, as I said earlier, Unitarian Universalists have a variety of beliefs or unbeliefs about God. And so, when I say God, if you want to hear the holy, the divine, the spirit of life, however you want to translate it, please do. The point is that we experience God or the holy or the divine as a unifying, dynamic, and mysterious force, and not as some being or entity, some puppet master pulling strings on the universe and controlling our destiny. We do not believe that the earthquake and the tsunami in Japan was an act of God in the theological sense. This phrase acknowledges that there is something more to life and to all of creation beyond what our senses tell us, beyond our knowing. And it tells us that we find this force in our own hearts when we come together in community, joined in common purpose, and we also find it out there, out in the natural world, which we know can be at once both beautiful and terrifying. This explains the healing power of a kind word from another, and the healing power of a beautiful sunset. Grace. Grace, that mysterious, unexpected, and undeserved gift that arrives in our lives when we need it most, is real. And it springs from these same sources. Our statement goes on. We are limited beings, but we are responsible for one another, and we help create the future. By this statement, we recognize that our reach only goes so far, that our lives are short, that we are mere drops in the bucket. And we're saying that that's no excuse to sit back and let life happen or accept conditions as they are. We are not a let go and let God kind of people. We see ourselves as co-creators of the future, working in partnership with others and with that mysterious force, that mysterious divine force. Our power is limited, but we are not powerless. And we are called, in the words of Reverend Forrest Church, to do what we can. We're getting to the home stretch. I know it's a lot of words. When we practice our faith, through generosity, gratitude, humility, and compassion. Generosity, gratitude, humility, and compassion. We help to make God manifest. And we do this not just for ourselves, but to serve others, promote justice, and transform a hurting world. Unitarian Universalism asks us, compels us, drives us, calls us to be generous, to be grateful, to be humble, oh, that's a tough one, that humility one, to be humble and to be compassionate. These are the principal spiritual practices of our faith. And when we engage in them, when we engage in these practices, we are making God, that mysterious transforming power of love, visible, manifest in the world. Here we are acknowledging that our faith is not practiced for our own self-aggrandizement or to gain some future reward. Our religion does not offer some special saintly prize for those who are good enough. We are generous because others are in need. We are grateful because we recognize that the blessings we have been given are not universally shared by all. We're humble. We're humble because we know that we too have faults and failures, that we're not perfect. And we are compassionate We are compassionate because we experience our connections with everyone and everything sharing this planet. Recognizing all these things, we are called to serve the greater good, to seek justice, and to make a difference. Let's all take a deep breath. That's a whole lot to absorb sitting here on a Sunday morning. But I hope, if nothing else, it's a start. I hope it's a start. I hope it's a start of a conversation. A conversation you can have with the person sitting next to you in your pew. A conversation you can have around your dinner table with your children. A conversation you can have in an adult faith development program. It's an opportunity to dig more deeply into what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist and what binds us together in shared identity and common purpose. As we celebrate the 50th anniversary of our faith, we need to be thinking about these things so that we can celebrate the 100th anniversary and the 150th and the 200th anniversary of Unitarian Universalism. So I ask you to affirm that while we are diverse in dictum, we are consistent in character. That we are bound together by profound and deeply meaningful attributes of identity. It's not about what we believe, it's about who we are. It's about what this place is. This is a place where, my church is a place where I am accepted for who I am, where I can exercise my passions and pursue them, where I am loved. This is a place where we can acknowledge that we are bound together by more than a shared disdain of creedal faiths and all the things we don't believe, or simply a commitment to social justice, which is another criticism we've heard. All you are is a place that does things. It's good you're doing them, but why do you do them? So let us today celebrate our shared identity and affirm our commitment to take up the task that was put before us 50 years ago, together to build the free and universal church of tomorrow. This day and every day, I wish you peace.